All right. Welcome, 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 everyone. Ladies and gentlemen and everyone in between, this is Tony's Political Ramblings, episode 10. 10 is pretty good. It's more than I thought I'd make, to be honest. But anyway, I'll get into the topic for today. I wanted to make a video, a podcast here on the Israel-Palestine conflict, as that is the major event, to use it, the word lightly, going on right now in the world. But that's not an area of expertise for me, so I decided that it would be best to sort of ground these discussions about Israel and Palestine in something that I'm more familiar with, and I'm going to bring in a couple of other case studies, and sort of talk about the larger theme of conflict and post-colonial legacies. So how this ties back to Israel and Palestine, just very brief rudimentary history, is that area was a colony of Britain in the 1900s. And after 1948, after in the wake of the Holocaust, there was a general consensus around the UK and around most of Europe at the time that the Jewish people should have their own country. And, you know, it's a good idea, you know. But it came at the expense of the Palestinians who were already living there. So then there's been a lot of things, and like a lot of horrible things that have happened since then. And like I said, I'm not qualified to talk about it, so I'm not going to talk about it in great detail. But the core piece here is that this conflict between Israel and Palestine, while Jews and Muslims have been fighting each other in the area for hundreds of years at this point, this particular strain of it that's going on right now is something that's sort of manufactured, in a sense. And we've seen this pattern play out in a few different places. But I'll just, like I said, I'll key on a couple that I'm rather familiar with. So the first one I wanted to look at was the conflicts that still go on today, might I add, between Pakistan and India. So in 1947, after a lot of head scratching and independence movements going on in India, there was a push to make India an independent state and no longer a British colony. And like I said, after a lot of consideration and thinking about things, eventually the British just drew some lines down the map and basically said to the people of what is now India, Bangladesh, and Pakistan, they said, all right, these are the borders now, good luck. And then they just pulled out, pretty much. And again, this is after hundreds of years of the British Empire stoking up conflict and a sort of distaste, a dislike, a resentment. That's the word I was looking for. A resentment for the Muslim minority in India. And as when the British had arrived, it was the Muslim Mughal Empire who was ruling the sort of subcontinent at the time. And there really wasn't a lot of beef between Hindus and Muslims back in the day. But it, like I said, it was really a product of the British colonizers sort of creating that narrative and making that sort of thing that, oh, well, the Muslims, they're the ones who've caused all of your troubles, not us, you know, not the British who are coming in and really creating a horrible environment for anyone who's not British out here. And so when this, by the time that this line, which by the way was just drawn by a Cyril Radcliffe, who was a lawyer from Britain, and he just drew the line at one point. And this is, of course, after a lot of deliberations, but again, it was just a lawyer who drew the line in the sand and said, all right, well, this is Pakistan, this is India, and this is East Pakistan, which is now called Bangladesh. But by the time this all happened, the tensions were so high. And when those new borders came into effect, you had a lot of Muslims crossing in. crossing in from India to Pakistan, or East Pakistan, or West Pakistan and East Pakistan. And then you had a lot of Hindus trying to come over from East Pakistan and West Pakistan back into India. And it created a lot of deaths. I want to say somewhere around 2 million people died just trying to get back and forth because of just the horrible violence and bloodshed that's come from that. And it's not really it's not at all, actually, something that's been resolved to this day. And even now, you have very strong anti-Muslim rhetoric coming out of the central government of India. And you have even these policies that make it that are openly discriminating against Muslims in India. And you have a very Hindu-centric nationalism type going on in India right now. And that is completely a product of the British colonial legacy. That was not there before. And so it's something that hasn't really been resolved since, hasn't at all been resolved since. And Muslims still face a lot of discrimination in India. And so I wanted to bounce over to the Korean Peninsula as well, because I think this is another great example of this sort of post-colonial conflict. And the two Koreas are a perfect example of this. After the end of World War II, basically, the Korean Peninsula, which was basically just known as Korea, there was only one at the time, it was basically split in half at the 38th parallel. The Russians, Soviet Union took the top half, and then the U.S. took the bottom half. And from 1945 till around 1948, I want to say, somewhere around then, the two countries occupied the two halves of Korea. And there was a big power vacuum going on there, and there was a lot of effort to establish new leaders. And in the case of both North and South Korea, there were two leaders that were sort of found that were going to be a little more moderate and willing to work together. But the U.S. and the Soviet Union worked hard to push for more extreme leaders. And so in the North, you obviously have the installation of Kim Il-sung, which has led to this cult of personality centering around the Kim family that still goes on to this day. And in the South, you saw the installation of Syngman Rhee, which was the first of several military dictators who ran South Korea. A lot of people don't know this about South Korea. Even I didn't know it, in all honesty. I did not know this for long, but that for a good stretch of South Korea's history, I want to say the first 40 years, 1948 to 1988, South Korea was a dictatorship, a military dictatorship. There was no other way around it. And it was not until the late 1980s, until democracy, a functioning democracy was actually installed. And so, you know, people look at South Korea today and they say, oh, well, you know, you have all the K-pop stars and the tech and all that, and, you know, the Hyundais and all. And you think, oh, well, South Korea must have been this glorious place. But it wasn't. For 40 years, there was political instability and censorship and violence. And so when we circle this back, you know, we put this in the context of the current problems happening between Israel and Palestine, the current problems, the legacy of Pakistan and India and the Great Partition in 1947, and you run here with the Koreas, and obviously that's, I didn't even go into the Korean War, and the threats of nuclear violence between the two countries that still persist to this day. It's, you know, there are a lot of these problems that we're seeing now develop can be left at the feet of countries like the United Kingdom and the United States, as well as the Soviet Union. And so the whole larger point of this podcast here is to sort of posit that, you know, it is, in my opinion, the responsibility of countries like the US and the UK to actually work to resolve these problems that they in no small part helped create. This does not mean send a lot of aid, military aid, to one side, you know, and support just the establishment of one over the other. But this means a peaceful reconciliation between the two sides. And obviously, that's easier said than done. But I believe the point is still a valid one. In the case of Israel and Palestine, the U.S. has supported the Israelites way more than the Palestinians. And a lot of this is based off of an evangelical Christian-based foreign policy, where a lot of right-wing Republican politicians believe that when the Jews go back to Israel and Jerusalem, that the second coming or the rapture will come and Jesus will be reborn. And that guides genuine U.S. foreign policy out there. And it has affected the lives of millions who live in the area and who live in the region. And so, you know, when you have that play out, it's just irresponsible. And when you're a country like the U.S., your job is not to overwhelmingly support one side or to back out and install a dictator that is going to lean to your interests, or in the case of the UK, completely abandon the colony just as you split it up based on very clear lines in the sand that you created. So the whole point is here, if you're a country like the US, the UK, the USSR, I guess now just Russia, it is in your best interest, and it is your responsibility in my eyes, to do everything possible to facilitate a peaceful transition to a more peaceful, stable situation. And I believe that is 100% in the U.S.'s job description for how they should move forward here in the Israel-Palestine crisis happening right now.